on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, I want to complete what we started last time, just to lay down in a basic way what we're actually saying with the initial part of Shema. So just to sum up, very short, we analyzed the pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, which we understood to mean we are admonishing ourselves, or when we're saying we're really hearing the admonishment. The admonition to listen carefully, because you're about to hear something of the utmost importance. Shema Yisrael, every Jew, every Yisrael, realize that too. You're being addressed as the Yisrael now. You are of utmost importance, and therefore listen to this. You're qualified to hear this. Shema Yisrael. Hashem, that is, okay, Hashem, we'll leave it at that. Contemplate what that means. Elokeinu is busy caring personally for us. He is kiviyachol, our personal God. That Hashem was our personal God, who is actually the source of all existence. Echad is really all there is. Since I want to just keep it simple, I'm going to leave it at that. But as we said last time, all there is has various significances with different angles of relevance to us. Then we move on and we say, in other words, really what this is telling us is, you should really set your whole life up with the focus of Hashem Echad. You should see Hashem Echad, everything about life is Hashem Echad, and Hashem should really be your one focus in life. Now, the perspective of this is now Ve'ahavta. Now, the proper reaction for this should be an unbelievable love. Meaning, in as much as your response to hearing, you're Jewish, oh, that means you have to be single-mindedly dedicated to Hashem. And as much as to you that means duty or whatever, I don't know, you didn't do your Shema right. You haven't really contemplated and appreciated what it means. When you really realize what it means, that Hashem is everything who He is interested in caring about you and having a personal relationship with you, your mind should be blown. And therefore, if you want to gauge whether you got it right, you should love Hashem b'chol levavcha, in a general way, b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol ma'idecha, with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your veriness. Okay? We'll see. Ma'idecha means everything that's intense about you, which can denote your capabilities, your possessions, everything that's intense about you. Ma'id means very, right? All of your veriness, whatever is very about you. So what does that mean? So first of all, Levavecha means with all of your heart. With all of your heart really means with all of your passion. Meaning, any passions that you have, what passions does a person have? A person might love a certain type of food, or a certain type of pastime. Or a person might love, some of us will love our wives. A person might love his child. But yet we're being told, your love of Hashem should overshadow, or eclipse, that's really the better word, should eclipse any other loves that you have. Meaning, that when we're coming to see where is your heart, my heart is primarily Hashem. Anything else fits in. But my heart is primarily dedicated to Hashem. That eclipses anything else. I have no other passions in my life, no other desires in my life that can compete with my desire to get close to Hashem, with my passion for Hashem. And therefore, Chazal expound b'chol vavcha to mean b'shnei yitzarecha. with your Yetzer Tov and your Yetzer Hara. What does that mean? You're supposed to love Hashem with your Yetzer Tov and your Yetzer Hara. Okay, loving with Hashem with your Yetzer Tov, fine. But how do you love Hashem with the Yetzer Hara? So the Rashi explains that what this means is exactly what we're saying. Yetzer Hara doesn't necessarily mean Averis. It means a person's passions. A person's passions, if they're not controlled, will translate into Averis. But really it means a person's passion. All of your passions, Lamaisa, should be dedicated to Hashem. Or whatever passions you have should be eclipsed by a love for Hashem. The example of that, he says, is Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu finally had his son after, well, we don't know what age he got married, but let's say he got married at 30, for argument's sake. He was waiting for a son for 70 years. That son was, none of us knows what it means to wait for a son for 70 years and then to get it after 70 years. Wait for a child for 70 years. Love is not the word. We can't begin to appreciate how much he loved his son. And yet, as soon as Hashem said, slaughter him for me, Vayashkem Avraham Bavoyka, Avraham Avinu got up energetically, went to do it. The Rashba says, he wasn't going about it with a long face. It was simply because, as passionately as he loved his son, his passion for Hashem eclipsed that. And therefore, when Hashem said, I want you to offer your son up to me, there wasn't even a question. Why? Because he was the one who personified that my passion for Hashem eclipses any other passion that I have in my life. And therefore, of course, when we're talking about simple desires or things like that, your love of Hashem will knock anything else that clashes with it out of the ballpark. B'chal nafshecha, with all of your soul. All of your soul means that you're ready to give up your soul. You're ready to give up anything for Hashem. So here also, Chazal expounds that. B'chal nafshecha, afilo noitzelis nafshecha. Even if it comes down to giving your life for that. My love of Hashem is so intense that it's not even a question. I'll throw my life out willingly and also accept any other suffering for the sake of Hashem willingly because of how great my love for Him is. This, the Rashba says, is represented by Yitzchak Avinu. Avraham Avinu was overcoming his passions, but Yitzchak was the one who was sticking out his throat to the knife. Again, same idea. Because of his passionate love to Hashem, Hashem wants me as a carbon, I'm throwing myself. And then, with all of your veriness, again, a little bit of a vague way of saying it, but what it means is, everything that's special about you, everything that's distinct about you. In the most basic way, we'll say, Chazal expound this to mean, with all of your possessions. Meaning that a person is willing to dedicate everything, whatever it takes, I'll give everything in order to grow closer to Hashem. And the example of this, he says, is Yaakov Avinu, right? Avram, Yitzchak, and now Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, the Rashba says, I never understood it this way. It's interesting. It says that Yaakov Avinu dwelt in tents, right? Back in the beginning of Parshas Toldos. What is it? Stress that he dwelt in. So we know that Rashi tells us it means that he was busy learning Torah. Well, what's the stress that he dwelt in tents? So Rashba says that actually he went out to learn Torah, which means that he forsook, he let go of all the wealth of his father's house, left a life of comfort in order to go and dedicate his life to Torah. He was out in the tents instead of living in luxury in his father's home. So that's B'chol Ma'idecha. Everything that I have, I give for that. But it includes also, again, Ramban says, Ma'idecha means, Ma'id means very. Everything that's intense about you. All your capabilities, all of your faculties, everything that you have about you, you're dedicating to Hashem. So now, according to what we're understanding now, it's a famous question that the Kavmainim asked. How can you command somebody to love? Love is an emotion. Either you have it or you don't. You can command people to do things. How can you command somebody to love? The perspective that the Rashba is giving on this is, love of Hashem is really the gauge of whether you properly studied and appreciate what it means to have a relationship with Hashem. You don't love Hashem? Or, put it another, well, we'll show another manifestation of this. You don't love Hashem? that means you don't really appreciate what it means that he's telling you, I want a relationship with you. If you would appreciate who Hashem is, that means. So in other words, you're being told, no, you can't just decide, okay, I'm going to turn on the love switch. If you don't love Hashem, that means go back, sit down, study a little more the significance of what it means that there is a Hashem, and who Hashem is, and quite what he is, and the fact that he's interested in a relationship with little me. If you do truly appreciate that, it'll automatically be love. So therefore, the command is not so much, hey, you don't love? Love Hashem. No, the command is, work a little harder to appreciate what it means, that you mean something to Hashem. And not only that you mean something to Hashem, that Hashem loves you dearly. If you study that properly, you can tell if you study that properly whether you feel a love for Hashem. The same thing goes for Simcha. Right? The Torah says, when the Torah is discussing the admonitions of the Torah, Parshas Kisisa, when it's discussing the tragedies, the misfortunes that will befall the Jewish people if they don't go and they don't do what they need to do, so when it describes all the misfortunes and it says, "Tachasa shalevatas Hashem alechecha b'simcha meroid koil." This is coming upon you since you did not serve Hashem with happiness and when you had everything. So the Rambam says something very interesting. He says, it's a punishment for not serving Hashem happily. Meaning the very fact that a person doesn't serve Hashem happily could be cause for punishment. So here the question is, where in the Torah is there a mitzvah to be happy? There isn't anywhere in the Torah a mitzvah to be happy, except on Sukkot. On Yom Tov, it says the Samachta b'chagecha. Fine, okay. But outside of that, what does the Torah command us to be happy? That Hashem is punishing us for not doing something that He never told us to do?
The fact you're not happy doing it shows you're not
doing it right. It's the same thing as what we said before. There's no mitzvah to be happy. But if a person is not happy, it means that he's lacking in the fundamentals of Jewish faith. He's lacking in understanding what Hashem is. He doesn't properly understand the value of a relationship with Hashem. It's like the Dubna Magid's mashal. The Dubna Magid said that you have a person hired a porter to bring him a package that he was being delivered at the port. Okay. Fine. So the day comes and the porter is supposed to deliver it. He's figuring it's going to be here at about 12. At 2 o'clock, finally the porter knocks on his door and he's sweating and he's huffing and he's puffing and he's saying, oh boy, alright, I did the job, now pay up. The guy looks at him and says, you got the wrong package. The porter says, what do you mean? You didn't even see the package I bought. So he says, why are you huffing and puffing and sweating? Because I just schlepped your package the whole way. So that's how I know you got the wrong package. My package was an envelope. It was a small envelope. What are you huffing and puffing and sweating about? You got the wrong package. So the Zubin Magid says that when we are suffering with our Avodas Hashem, we're suffering Jews. We realize that in this world we are righteous sufferers. It's in the next world that we'll be happy. Hashem says, I don't know what you're doing, but it's not my mitzvahs. My mitzvahs. Meaning, if you're serving me with the right understanding, that's a cause for joy. When a person properly appreciates what it means to serve Hashem, this world is bliss. This world is bliss. Now, the point here is not to make us feel guilty. And at the end of the day, this is all relative. You get schar for whatever mitzvahs you do, but the point is to realize that these are gauges of your proper understanding of what service of Hashem is. Do you realize that it's an unbelievable privilege? Do you realize that these mitzvahs that you view as an encumbrance, there are billions of malachim who are terribly jealous of you. They're going nuts. They wish they had the opportunity, but no. Hashem granted this opportunity only to a select few. A very small minority in the big picture of things. The crown jewel of the creation, the Jew. So therefore, simcha, love of Hashem, these things might not be you might not be able to command a person. Well, be happy in love. But it's a barometer. Simcha and Ahava are the ways of measuring whether you properly understood what it means, the significance of Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Now, I just want to make a point here in parentheses, because this is very important, just on a psychological level. There are people who are not naturally people who feel happy. You have people who are exuberant types of people, and you have people who are not naturally happy people. Then you tell them, be happy, and they try to feel in a happy mood, and they face the smile on their face, and they, you know, they go with a bouncy walk, until they say, you know, what am I doing? Such people, I know such people, spend a lot of their time feeling guilty about what we're discussing. I should be happy about the privilege of serving Hashem. And I understand that. And I appreciate the fact that it's a privilege, but I still don't feel happy. And they make themselves nuts. And it turns into torture. Because they're busy checking the whole time, am I happy or not? I'm not happy. That means I'm in trouble. So here we have to note something. Happy doesn't mean exuberant. Happy means realizing that you're a lucky person and being, not complacent, there's a better word. Being content. Content. Being truly and deeply content. That's right. I don't feel in a good mood right now. It's hard to put me into a good mood. But I'm content in the knowledge that that's okay, because that's how Hashem made me. And Lamaisa, yes, I do appreciate it. And I'm glad this is the situation, even though I'm not beaming. But I'm content, and I feel good about it. And no, I'm not in the best mood right now, because I'm not the type. You have to realize that. It doesn't have to mean exuberance. Serene. Some people are just not the type. What?
Serene.
Yeah, serene, content. That's really the point. Feeling on a deeper level that I know and appreciate that my life is full of unbelievable meaning and significance. And feeling fulfillment. Ava and Simcha can be expressed in that way too. That's, by the way, the big difference between Simcha and Hoilelus. Right? When you see people, you know, bouncing up and down on a car that's playing loud music and singing about being the Simcha, might be Simcha, might not. Jumping up and down is not always necessarily an expression of Simcha. Simcha is an inside feeling of contentment. You can see a person walking around with a serene look on his face, and you see somebody else laughing boisterously with a big boombox. One might be happy and the other might not be. Happy means contentedness, the realization that I'm in a very good place and I'm lucky to be here. Yes, now people, even when they win $1 million, you might not see them bouncing up and down. They don't have to feel guilty about that either. Okay, that's really parentheses, just to put things in perspective, because I know that there are people who struggle with this in a bad way. Okay, then the Rashba continues. Love Hashem with all your passions, with all your soul, meaning whatever sacrifice it demands on your part should be a no-brainer for Hashem, anything, and with all of your veriness, as we discussed it, okay? Probably wouldn't pass words check, spell check. It's very good. Very good. So that puts it into perspective. The Rashba said that the Cholavavcha corresponds to Avram. The example of B'chol Nafshecha is Yitzchak. Example of B'chol Moedecha is Yaakov. So Shlomo is telling us that Be'ahavta, the gematria of Be'ahavta is Avos. The same letters of Be'ahavta. Without the Ha'avos. Ha'avos. Very good. Okay. Now, the Rashba goes on. Okay, then we continue to what, again, like you said the other day, is usually kind of written off as the technical part. Well, okay, that's really not so technical. First, we're told, these things that you've been hearing should be aliv obecha. The Rashba says, again, these are not things that just, you hear it, you get the idea. Work to internalize. Like we said, Shema means contemplate it. When you hear this, contemplate it, study it, internalize it, to the extent that it gets engraved on your heart. This is one of the most basic elements of your personality, this realization. You walk around it. It's engraved on your heart. Now we go further. This should turn into an obsession. Meaning again, when you really realize what it means, it should turn into an obsession. Again, the Rashba is describing here, or the Psukim are describing here, according to the Rashba, what a person will look like when he really does reach that state of understanding and appreciation. So the next, and therefore, we're commanded to use this as your barometer. Okay? So he said, it should turn into an obsession. Something that you talk to your kids about all the time. Vishinantam levanecha. When you're sitting around the table, what are you talking? You're talking about what interests you, right? Vishinantam levanecha. There's something so exciting going on in our lives that this is what you're busy schmoozing about with all the time. That's what the talk in your house is about. Again, this is the Rashba. This is not emotional Benjamin Jacobson. This is the Rashba, one of the cold intellectuals of the Rishonim. Okay? Shantum lefanecha, v'dibar tobam, v'shivtecha beveisecha, v'lechtecha v'derech, v'shavtecha v'kumecha. Again, this should be an obsession. That's what you're schmoozing about the whole time. That's what you're talking about the whole time. You're busy talking about Hashem. How excited you are about Hashem. It's like, you know, if you have somebody you admire. You have somebody you admire. Let's say it's a teacher or a basketball star or whatever it is. Somebody who you really admire. To the extent that you're obsessed with them. So, you know how whenever you hear somebody start talking, first of all, you look at any excuse to talk about them. Have you ever been in the company of a person who suddenly starts going on and on about a teacher he has, doesn't interest anybody there? Right? You're sitting with somebody in a family gathering, or something comes up, reminds him of his teacher, or in many cases it'll be reminds her of her teacher, and just starts going on and on and on. Why? Because this is someone they were crazy about, and when they're reminded, they just turn on and they keep going. Right? They're obsessed with the person. This is how we should work with Hashem. And okay. So yes, v'shivtcha v'esecha v'lechtcha v'aderech v'shavtcha v'kumecha, right? When you're home, when you're on the road, when you lie down, when you get up, this is what you're busy with. Ukshaltam lo'ois al yodecha v'ayil l'tay tofois v'ein einecha v'saptam al mezuzois v'esecha v'isharecha. See, I think I said the other day, really the point is Hashem is again showing the extent that He wants this relationship to be, where you have it all over the place, right? You have it on your eyes, here, there, on your doors, wherever you go, you're just saying Hashem, 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 Hashem. Hashem wants this is the level of the that Hashem wants the relationship to be at. Now it's also more than that. Taitafis. What's a taitafis? You have it on your head, of course. That symbolizes that you're reminded of it all the time, but it's also more than that. A taitafis is a head ornament. Tefillin are called taitafis. Taitefes isn't really a word for tefillin. Taitefes is a certain type of adornment that was worn on the head. So the Rashba says, you wear your relationship with Hashem as an adornment on your head. Meaning what? A baseball fan walks around with the cap of his team on his head, right? He'll never walk around. A New York Met fan will never be caught outside with a Yankee cap. Chas v'shalom. Met cap, right? He's proud to show his association through, well, either his t-shirt, the t-shirt that says the name of a Puerto Rican in the back with some number on it, right? In the gematria of Tumo or something like that. And this is what he's proud of. And again, he knows what he's wearing. His t-shirts are not haphazard. Depending on the season, it's either the right baseball team, the right basketball team, or the right hockey team. Right? But again, he's showing he's proud of his association. So the Rashba is saying, wear that relationship on your head as an adornment. It's an ornament. A step outside. Okay, we don't wear tefillin outside these days, but that's the idea. I'm showing off. I'm boasting my relationship with Hashem. Gaiva. Here we walk with our noses in the air. We think the world of ourselves. Why? Because Hashem chose me. Because I'm close up with Hashem. And this is what's expressed throughout the tefillin. Okay. There, we've studied, like I said, in a basic way, a deeper level of Ahavta. Sounds like a contradiction in terms, but it's not. It's a little deeper than just the simple translation of the word, but this is really the most basic level of depth of Shema and Ahavta. Okay. Now we'll move on. I do remember this is a Gemara sheet. Okay. But look, this is part of the Gemara. This is what the Gemara meant.
We don't come here for the Gemara.
What's that?
We don't come here for the Gemara.
Okay. Okay. Now, okay, we're going to begin 2, 4, 6, the seventh wide line in the second set of wide lines, right? There are, we got two sets of wide lines. Yud Gimel Amud Beis, in the middle wide lines, the seventh line, after one word, you got two dots. Am I have nothing? Okay. Got it? Alright? Okay. Omar Rav Nosson Bar Mar Ukva, Omar Rav Yehuda. Rav Nosson Bar Mar Ukva said in the name of Rav Yehuda, Al Levovecha Ba'amida. Remember in the third pasuk of Shema, you have the words Al Levovecha, right? Al Levovecha. Those words should be said standing up. Somehow you never noticed in shul that everybody else bounced up to those words and then sat back down. But those words Al Levovecha should be said standing. So the Gemara says what? Al Levovecha Sal Kedaita. Aleph Avecha Salka Daita? What do you mean? Those two words you should say standing? That doesn't make sense. So you bounce up to those two words, you sit back down? Elohema, so you're right, let's rephrase that. Elohema, rather, what we mean to say is Ad Aleph Avecha Ba'amida. Until the words Aleph Avecha, meaning from Shema, until the words Aleph Avecha say standing. Mikan ve'elach loy. But from that point on, you don't have to be standing.
Don't have to be or shouldn't.
What's that?
Don't have to be or shouldn't.
Well, you're referring back to the sugya of Yishamai, right? Okay, we'll put that into perspective momentarily. Now, what does this mean? This means that you're supposed to stand up for Shema? So first of all, what you're raising, the point that you're raising, Beryl, is that we learned earlier that Beis Hillel say you say Shema in whatever position you're in. If you're sitting, say it sitting. We're dafka discouraged from standing up special for Shema. So therefore, Yerushalmi clarifies, Tosfos brings this down, that the intent is not that if you're sitting you should stand up. Not standing as opposed to sitting. The point is you should stand still, meaning even though the halacha is you can recite Kriya Shema on the go, for these psukim you should stand still. So it's standing as opposed to moving. If you're moving, stand still. If you're sitting down, stay sitting. That's fine. But if you're moving, stand still for these psukim. You should be still for these psukim, not standing per se. Still for these psukim. Now, Rabbi Yechanan Omar, Rabbi Yechanan says, Kol ha-parsha kula ba'amida. Now not just until this end of the third pasuk, the entire parsha should be said standing still, meaning until the end of El Havta, until Mishorech. Now, why does Rabbi Yechanan say this? The Ozder Rabbi Yechanan l'tameh, this is Rabbi Yechanan in accordance with his own previous shita, the Omar Rabbe Barbachana Omar Rabbi Yechanan. We saw earlier, the other day, that Rabbi Bar Bachana said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Halachik Rabbi Abba Shoma Mishum Rabbi Yehuda. That the halacha follows Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Acha in the name of Rabbi Yehuda. That what? That kavana, intent, is required for the whole first parsha. We said that we paskin, that kavana is required only for the pasuk of Shema. But Rabbi Yochanan holds that you have to have kavana, you have to have intent for the full first parsha. And therefore he says, since you have to be properly focused for the whole first parsha, We should stand in one place for the whole first parsha. But since we don't follow that opinion, we don't have to follow what Rabbi Yochanan said. So therefore we go back to the original shita that said that you should stand still until the words I'll live on them. Okay. So but now this opens up room for another question. We just said that Rabbi Yochanan said that you have to stand still for the whole parsha because he holds that you need intent for the whole parsha. So now, this shita that says, the first shita that says, you have to stand still until Alev Avecha, does that reflect the shita that you have to have Kavanah until Alev Avecha? Presumably it does, right? Because we're saying, Rabbi Yochanan said the whole parsha because he requires Kavanah for the whole parsha. Then this shita that said until Alev Avecha presumably holds that you have to have Kavanah until Alev Avecha. If so, that's not the halacha for us. Because we rule that you only need Kavanah for that first pasuk of Shema. Accordingly, would seem that for us the halacha would be something that wasn't mentioned in the Gemara. For us the halacha would be that you have to stand still only for that first pasuk. For Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. So therefore, yes, if you're on the go, you should stand still for the pasuk of Shema Yisrael, and that's all. No, what it means is, you have to have kavanah for everything you do. But the point here is that for this pasuk, kavanah is essential to being yotzei. Without kavanah in the first pasuk, you're not yotzei kriya shema. You have to repeat it.
Standing still for
no. You know what? I'll explain why momentarily, believe me. Okay. So now, that the calculation that I just made, again, note that I just kind of departed from what the Gemara said. The Gemara said, Alev Avecha. But I said, yeah, that's because it's following the sheet that you have to have Kavanah until Alev Avecha. But since we rule Shema, you only have to have Kavanah until Shema. Sorry, you only have to stand still for Shema. That is indeed the opinion of Tosfos, the Rif, and the Rambam. That's what the Shulchan Aruch paskens. You only have to stand still for the pasuk of Shema. But there are other shitas, the Bahag and the Ravid. They say that no, the two are not connected. You only have to have Kavanah for Shema, but nevertheless, you have to be standing still. You have to be still until the pasuk of Alev Avecha. Because even though Kavanah is not essential for that part of Shema, it is essential that it be done in a respectful, proper, dignified way. But don't show that you're not having Kavanah. Don't say Shema with Kavanah and then play basketball while you're saying Be'ahavta. No. Even though you don't, the Kavanah is not prerequisite then, it's not prerequisite then, but do say it in a settled way. Sit down and say it like a mensch. Don't sit down. Stand. Fine. But stand still. Say it like a mensch. And therefore, even though Kavanah is only prerequisite for Shema, you must be still stationary until Alev Avecha. Now again, the Shulchan Aruch follows the first opinion that no, you only have to stand still for Shema itself. But yet the Poskim do cite the second opinion as something to take into account. Apparently it is not the essential halacha. The essential halacha is that you have to be still only for the first pasuk. But the Poskim cite it as something to take into account that you should be still and not on the go through Alev Avecha. Now here I'll just add another interesting point. If that's the idea, then why stop at Alev Avecha? If the point is to say it in a respectable, dignified way, why shouldn't that go all the way until the end of the of Be'ahavta? So the place can say something interesting. Which pasuk is the pasuk that comes after Alev Avecha? V'shinantam levanecha v'dibarta bam v'shivtecha b'veisecha uvelechtecha v'aderech. The next pasuk says you should say this, teach it to your children and say it whether you're sitting at home or while traveling on the road. This is the pasuk that explicitly permits you to say Kriya Shema on the go. And therefore, it cannot be that this pasuk has to be said standing still. So therefore, yes, while it's appropriate to stand still while you're saying even beyond Shema Yisrael, he's saying Ahavta, Vayah Advar Ma'ele, but that pasuk already we can't say that about. The pasuk, the very pasuk that says that you can say Kriya Shema on the go, you can certainly say on the go. So therefore, Lamaisa, essentially, you must stand still for the pasuk of Shema. It's recommended to stand still until Aleph Avecha, and after that, there's already no need, you can continue walking. Now, this might not sound so relevant for us, because how many of us are actually davening on the go? But this could be relevant if a person is davening while he's driving. Oh, flying is not included in this discussion, because since the point is to be saying it in a settled way, flying doesn't conflict with that. The place can say, for example, a person who's traveling in a wagon, he's sitting in the wagon and the wagon is moving, that's not called saying Kriya Shema on the go. That's called being still. That you can say Kriya Shema while you're sitting in a moving wagon. And to the same, on the same scale, you can say Kriya Shema while you're sitting in the passenger seat. Or while you're on a plane. That's no problem. Sitting in a moving vehicle doesn't conflict with, it's called saying it still. Driving is a shaila because that requires more attention. Therefore, that's a shaila. The Pesach can say it about riding. If you're actually driving a horse, it's a shaila. How that works. Okay. Now what about, but where this can also be relevant is, probably never happens to anybody, but there are people who sometimes daven at home. And when a person is davening at home, or depending on the choyer, whatever it is, sometimes the person might pace while he's davening. Especially if you're trying to pass time. Sometimes people will pace while they're davening. So this is applicable for pacing also. Pace all you want, but not during the pasuk of Shema. Stop, stand still. Pasuk of Shema, stand still. After Aleph Avecha, or if your mamish have ants in your pants, after the pasuk of Shema, you can resume your pacing. Okay, now you asked, what about shuckling?
What about a woman who's rocking a baby?
What about a woman who's rocking a baby? Okay. So first let me answer Rabbi Yitzchak's question. What about shuckling? What? If she's saying it, she should say it right. Especially since this is an issue of the covet of Shema. But first let's address Rabbi Yitzchak's question. Rabbi Yitzchak asked, what about shuckling? Have to stop shuckling for Shema? So the answer to this is certainly not, because if the whole purpose of the motion is meant to enhance your kavana, so that's all part of the point. So certainly shuckling doesn't conflict with this. As far as rocking a baby goes, I'm assuming the Poskim don't take it to this level, but I'm assuming that this will be subject to the same parameters as making a bracha. When you make a bracha also, the halacha is that you should not be doing anything at the time. And therefore, I would assume that it would be better not to rock a baby. However, in the specific case of rocking a baby, as opposed to peeling an orange or something, sometimes you need to rock the baby in order to be able to say Kriya Shema peacefully. In such a situation, same thing with brachas. You can do what you need to do, if that's the only way I'll be able to do it. Okay. Fine, we'll move on. Tanu Rabbanan. It says in the Braisa, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Does that ring a bell? Zu Kriya Shema Shel Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. That was the entire Kriya Shema of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. His Kriya Shema began and ended with Shema Yisrael. What does that mean? So let's see exactly what that means. Omar le Rav de Rabbi Chia. Rav told Rabbi Chia, you see, Rabbi had a very intense shiur schedule. He began his shiurim before this Zman Kriya Shema started. And he continued his shiurim straight through the full time frame of Kriya Shema. Until after Zman Kriya Shema. And the question is, what did he do with Kriya Shema? So Rav said to Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Chiya was Rav's uncle. Rav joined Rebbe's shir. Rebbe was the end of the Tanoim. Rav was from the earliest Tamaroim. Rabbi Chiya was kind of straddled the line between Tanoim and Amaroim. So Rabbi Chiya was Rav's uncle and his Rebbe. And Rabbi Chiya was kind of Rav's guardian in Rebbe's yeshiva. And Rav came in as a young junior Talmud, kind of like humbly coming into that big intimidating yeshiva of Rebbe. And Rabbi Chiya kind of took care of him. Rabbi Chiya was one of the senior Talmidim. He was Rav's uncle. And he kind of took care of him and taught him the ropes. So Rav was sitting in on the shiurim, and he made an innocent observation. He told Rabbi Chiya, Rebbe Shiurim go on from before Zman Kriyashma all throughout the time frame of Kriyashma. I don't see Rebbe accepting upon himself the rule of Hashem, meaning I don't see him saying Kriyashma. What's with Kriyashma? Mainly davened afterwards, but Kriyashma, the Zman for Kriyashma came and went. Omar Lei, so Rabbi Chiya told him, Bar Pachsi, the son of great ones. This was an affectionate nickname that he called him. The son of great ones. Did you ever notice that invariably, in the middle of the shir, Rebbe will go like this? He kind of passes his hand over his face. You ever notice that? So he said, at that time, Mekabel Olav Ol Malchus Shamayim. He recites Kriyashma. He accepts upon himself the rule of Hashem. Which really means that all he said was that first pasuk. In the middle of the shir, almost unnoticeably. I mean, Chiya was a close Talmud. He knew Rav from close up. But it was not really noticeable. Rebbe would kind of go like this in the middle of the shir. Looked like he was catching his breath. But actually he was saying Kriyashma. And he just said that one pasuk. Now, he said it with his lips, yeah. But that apparently was not so conspicuous. Okay. What's that? It was just one puzzle. It was just that one puzzle. It could have been, you know, maybe he sat like this for a minute. It looked like he was gathering his thoughts. I don't know. The truth is that Yerushalmi says that he might have actually gone until Alev Ovecha. But the way we're taking it here is that no, he just said that one puzzle. Okay, well, we'll get back to Rebbe in a minute, but I just want to note in parentheses, by the way, the place can pick up on everything. They say, why did Rav pass his hand over his face? Is that reminiscent of something? We all do that when we say Shema. We all put our hands on our face. Where does it come from? This is the source. The place can pick up on this. They say, why did Rebbe pass his hand over his face? Say Kriyashma, under his breath. Apparently, he made a point of doing it in order not to be distracted. He wanted to be able to concentrate well. He would cover his eyes. And therefore, they say, oh, that's what Rebbe did. It's a recommended practice. And therefore, yes, the Shulchan Aruch rules it la'alacha, that, yes, it's a minig, certainly not a chiyuv, but it's a minig to cover your eyes when you say Kriyashma, like Rebbe did when he said Kriyashma. So this is the source for it. What's that? Cover them with your hands. You actually close them and cover them with your hands. Okay, but back to Rebbe. So this is a very interesting practice. Express Kriyashma. So the Gemara wonders. Again, all he said was that one pasuk. So choizer v'goimra, would he afterwards complete it? Meaning, when he finished the shir, would he then say the rest of Kriyashma? I ain't choizer v'goimra. Or would he not complete it? Meaning, he sufficed with that one pasuk, and that was that. So, this was a machlokes between Rebbe's closest talmidim. Bar kapara oimer, he would not repeat it afterwards. Rabbi Shimon ben Rebbe Omer, Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rebbe, said, he would. Rebbe's son. See, isn't this interesting? You would think, wait a minute, how can you disagree with Rebbe's son about what Rebbe did? Oh, apparently the Talmidim was so close that, yes, we often see them disputing with Rebbe's children, with Rabbi Shimon ben Rebbe, as to what Rebbe's practice was. Whatever it is, Rebbe Machlokes, whether he would repeat it afterwards or not. Yeah. No. No. Well, actually, it's a Shiloh. Okay, we'll see. And maybe we'll see. Tonight, okay. Samalei Bar Kapara Rabbi Shimon Ber Rebbe. Bar Kapara said to Rabbi Shimon Ber Rebbe, Bishlama lididi, it makes sense according to what I'm saying. Damina in a choizer v'goimra. I say that he would not go back and repeat it. Then we can understand another thing that Rebbe did in his shir. Haino de mahadir Rebbe Ashweitzer. Another invariable practice that Rebbe had in his shir was that he would always make a point of bringing something up somehow in the course of the shir. The isba yitzias mitzrayim. He would bring up something connected to yitzias mitzrayim always in the course of the shir. Why? Because he wanted also to fulfill not only the mitzvah of Shema itself, but also the mitzvah of mentioning Yitzias Mitzrayim. So therefore, he didn't do it by saying Vayomer, but again, the chiyuv is really just to mention Yitzias Mitzrayim. So you'd always bring up something connected to Yitzias Mitzrayim in his shir. So according to me, that's well understood. This was going to constitute the full recitation. He wasn't going to say anything else afterwards. And therefore, he would make a point of saying something about Yitzias Mitzrayim in the shir. Elo lididoch da amris choizer v'goimra. But according to you, that you say that no, he would repeat the whole thing, he would complete the whole thing afterwards. So he's saying it's yes, but try him later anyways. So, lama leila adure. Why would he make this point every day of mentioning it's yes, but try him in this year? The Gemara answers, no, he would say it afterwards, and yet he still wanted to say Yitzias Mitzrayim beforehand. Kedei lahazkir Yitzias Mitzrayim bizman, because at least the mention of Yitzias Mitzrayim, he wanted to say at the right time. The rest of Shema is going to say later after the time already passed, but Yitzias Mitzrayim, he wanted to say at the right time, and therefore that's why he would mention it, even though he would repeat it afterwards. So it's not so clear machlokes whether he repeated afterwards or not. He would say the brachos afterwards. Yeah, he would say the brachas afterwards. Now just what? Also afterwards. Yeah. Now just note, we just have to understand, why is Rebbe doing this? How could he decide to skip the middle of Shema? So there are two explanations of Maisa that the place can give. The Rush says, either the Pshat is that, even a person who's learning must interrupt his learning in order to say Shema, when a person is teaching Torah publicly, he doesn't have to. Interesting Kiddush, which is lamaisa not cited lalo. Okay? Now the other explanation is the Ritva, the Rosh. The Ritva says that Rebbe held that the only part of Shema that's Doraisa is the first pasuk, and there's a separate obligation Doraisa of mentioning Yitzias Mitzrayim. According to him, that was all that was Doraisa. Therefore, he didn't want to interrupt his learning for the Derabanan part of it. He would interrupt his learning for the Doraisa part, purchase Pasuk Shema, and also mentioning Yitzias Mitzrayim, but not for the rest. So all this Lamaisa is not relevant to us. Okay.